Welcome to Women on Wednesday.
My name is Bear. I'm here with Bea Arthur, and we're going to kick into this segment of the show here on KMUD 91.1 FM on Women on Wednesday. On May 24th, 1990, two Earth First organizers, Judy Barry and Daryl Turney, were injured, Judy very seriously, when a bomb exploded in Barry's car. Within hours, they were arrested for possession of explosives, even though it was obviously an assassination attempt. Judy was in intensive care after major surgery at the time of her arrest. No charges were ever filed and no real investigation was ever done. The FBI and Oakland police still claim Barry and Turney are the main suspects to this day. In 1991, Barry filed a civil lawsuit along with Turney for violations of their First and Fourth Amendment rights. After 12 years, the case finally made it to court. After slogging through every roadblock the FBI and Oakland police could come up with to keep it out of court, after a six-week trial and 3 weeks of jury deliberations, the jury found the FBI and Oakland Police Department liable for $4.4 million in damages. Today, we're honored to have one of the jurors here on KMUD, Daryl's hometown radio station, the station he called from jail after the bombing when he was given one collect call to make. And as we said, it can take a village to mount a lawsuit, so we are pleased to have you visit one of the villages in the community that has generated the forest protection movement of the North Coast. Welcome to Women on Wednesday, Mary Nunn.
Thank you.
And first, I'd like to thank you for being part of the solution to an extremely long-standing injustice and for making all the years of work and community fundraising worthwhile and for finally exonerating Judy and Daryl. And also, most importantly, for taking a courageous step to protect the rights of everyone to speak out and to organize for social change. Thank you very much. And so speaking of speaking out, why are you speaking up? You know, I've noticed like a major silence on the part of other jurors. What moves you to speak about what happened?
Well, I believe that what I played witness to in those 3 months was so utterly wrong, and I was so moved by it, that how could you not speak out? I thought it was pretty devastating what took place, and I think the more you speak out, the more you put it out in the forefront, the least likely it could replay itself again. Let's hope as such. I know it does every day, but I think the more you put it out there, the more people hear about it, it may make them think twice before they act in this manner again.
And what made the biggest impression on you during the trial, both on the plaintiff's and the defendant's side? And for people who haven't followed this case closely, in this case, the defendants are actually the FBI and the police, not us, which is a real turnaround.
Well, I guess what made the biggest impression upon me was the lying and the disregard. Coming to court thinking that just because they have this title, that was presence enough, that they didn't have to account for their actions of that time, that we would just buy into whatever they had to say simply because of who they were. And they're so wrong. You do have to give account for your actions. You don't get to just flow as you wish. So I would say that the blatant lying, the blatant disregard, the obvious evidence in the case, the lies in the search warrant, the immediate response to arrest, the way they were on scene so fast, all these different elements was just all too much to comprehend. So that was the biggest downfall as far as absorbing the FBI. And as far as the Earth First people, you could tell right away from their demeanor that The way they were being described just didn't fit. Something was grossly wrong with the picture they were projecting. Here were these people coming to court every day for 3 months, giving up their money, their life, you name it. I mean, the dedication was phenomenal. You don't see that every day. And they had an aura about them in the room. It was very, very, I don't know, very earthy, very loving, very nurturing. And it just... It didn't sit well, you know. And even with that, I mean, you can't really even go on that. It was really the facts of the case. But the type of people these FBI were prescribing them to be just didn't go over at all.
Right. It all added up to one kind of verdict, obviously. And like you were saying, the important thing was the facts in the case, which There were plenty of that.
Yeah.
Was there a particular moment during the trial when you realized that that the FBI and police defendants were the dishonest people and that Judy and Daryl were really the good guys? Because I know you didn't have any preconceived notion when you got on the jury.
Well, actually, you know, that's not true. I don't know if anyone knows this. I took a 180-degree turn in that courthouse. So that's not true. I kind of went in there. See, you have to understand.
You went in there thinking.
Well, you have to understand the era that I'm from. I'm not real well versed with environmental groups. I don't know a lot about it. I'm from a real kind of inner city, so I'm far removed from those type of aspects. And when I was subjected to all that was taking place in the courtroom, I was more to think. The only environments I had ever seen was people for the right, you know, in front of abortion clinics and hearing of doctors getting killed and then maybe some backlash back and forth. So I thought whatever was happening, you know, maybe the people involved had brought on their own plight or something, and maybe the cops were, whatever this all was, were kind of just trying to do whatever they could to settle it out. So I was actually, if you really want to know the truth about it, more partial towards them. Because I was thinking.
More partial towards the FBI. And
yeah,
the
because I just thought, well, you know, this is all I ever knew. I knew nothing of this world, nothing of this movement, nothing. But then when it started to come out, you know, and that was only in the opening statements, mind you. This was before the facts and the setup of the flow of things, and they started telling the story of the events. This was only in the open presentation. So I had heard nothing, but this is like, I'm sure it's nothing too severe, you know. But then when it all started to flow, I was like, oh, no, this can't be.
So was there a particular moment where you went, whoa, like had an epiphany, or was it the overall presentation?
I'd have to say everybody contributed. It wasn't just one person. I think each agent, when they took the stand and gave their address to their actions, was blatant something was wrong. I mean, it was wrong. I mean, one was blaming the other. One was diverting from the other. Nobody would claim anything or stand up. And it was amazing to me that one guy's statement through the whole thing was, I don't recall. I mean, how does that excuse you in life?
You don't recollect.
I mean, that doesn't excuse you in life. It doesn't excuse me in my life in anything.
Right.
I can't get away with that in anything. Not with my husband, not with my job. I have to give rhyme or reason for my actions. It's just not that simple. In the littlest things to the biggest things, there has to be reason. And so that didn't fly at all. That was just, wow, how do they get away with that type of thing? I was blown away by that.
No, I was one of the many people from Southern Humboldt and also many people from Mendocino County who attended the trial in support of the issues being fought for. And you know, please tell us, as a juror, did it matter that people were there in the courtroom every day? And did how they look matter? Did the demeanor of the audience matter? How did that, you know, play into the jury's... I mean, sometimes you thought, oh, the jury isn't paying any attention to us. We're paying attention to them, but...
Actually, it made a big difference to me. I guess I can primarily speak for me, because I don't like to speak for other people, but, I mean... to me, it made a big difference, because that showed dedication, it showed loyalty, it showed that this was something worthwhile and worth believing. This wasn't just to make a point. I mean, people don't give all that up to make a point. I mean, this was real, and that's why they had all those people behind them, supporting them. And I don't know anyone in the world that has that. I've never seen that kind of support before, mind you. And I've belonged to big organizations before, but they've never come down like that, ever once. And I'm talking churches and everything else. I've never seen it. For instance, when my mother passed away when I was a kid, she belonged to this Catholic church for many, many, many years. Us kids were dragged to it, you know, 3 days a week. And at her funeral, there were 5 people in attendance. And it was a congregation of 300 plus. Where were they at? I don't know. And it, of course, I'm not a practicing Catholic anymore as a result of that, because that was no family to me. You see, and so to see that was beautiful. You know, it meant the world to me. It meant the world to me. It made all the difference to see your faces there every day. And I was concerned for all of you. I didn't want you to be despaired, but, you know, of course, we couldn't let on in that respect. But I was very concerned about all of you, because I could see the dedication and loyalty. And I know it looked menacing sometimes because, you know, who we were up against, you know, sometimes it says it all in most cases, you know.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
And what do you think were the most effective arguments made by the plaintiffs and also by the defense? And for listeners not as familiar with this case, remember that the FBI and Oakland Police are the defendants. It took me a while to wrap my mind around that. We're so used to being on the defense. And actually, they tried to definitely make it out like Judy and Daryl were the guilty ones throughout the case. So it was, you know, quite a game.
Well, you know, unfortunately for me, it's not that hard of a leap. You know, I see police coming on scene and being unjust many different ways, many times over. It's unfortunate, but it's the way that it is. But to get back to the subject, I guess one exchange was with Senna.
Senna was
one of the FBI agents. Yes, yeah. He was the guy who actually came to the hospital and was interviewing Daryl, and then later escorted him to the police department. How he got there so fast and where he came from, I don't know, but he was there. Typically, FBI don't get involved till the next day or something, but they were on scene, like, within minutes. I mean, and they were formatting everything, influencing everyone. But getting back to the question at hand, when Senna was being questioned, that man took his glasses off so many times from irritation. I mean, he was literally, like, slamming them down to the point when we went back in the deliberation room, and it was odd, you know. I was like, I think, you know, they should have broke. You know, because he was very defensive. He was very agitated at the questions. He didn't like the fact that someone was trying to request him to answer them. He didn't like that at all. It was like he was bigger than that, and he was offended by it. And, you know, it was too bad. And he never really did address the questions. He kept skating them. He never gave any account for anything that he did. He just, you know, diverted or said he wasn't interested. He didn't care then. He didn't care now. And he you know, I don't know.
So he felt he was above or beyond
the law. Yeah, I mean, yeah. But you could see in his body language the arrogance and the agitated way that he was responding to the questions. To me, that too, like, why are you getting so moved by it? I mean, if you don't have any conscience or guilt, why are you getting so moved by it? Why are you slamming your glasses down? Why are you shrugging your shoulders? Why are you scrunching up your face? What's going on in there? You know, so that really is, I really question his body language. Right away, I wrote him off. Once he started acting in that manner, nothing he said made any difference to me because it was all full of aggression, and I could just imagine when he came on scene how aggressive he was with Daryl. I could just imagine. No matter what they said, it was an apparent the way he acted just in that courtroom, how he acts when people aren't watching, I'm sure is far severe.
Right.
So.
Wow.
And so that was one ideal. And then we had the famous Doyle. Oh, he's the lead FBI agent. He's on scene immediately.
The bomb expert, right?
Yeah, he's the supposed bomb expert. Of course, he says he's not an expert of anything.
Mm-hmm.
He won't even claim that title, although he's adorned with it. He's on scene right away, influencing everyone, and they're all like puppy dogs following his every word. And he never gets his deposition in the mail. He's got 12 years to get it, but somehow he never gets it. And we find out in court he's actually had two depositions, and they've got copies of both depositions, but he has neither. And he not only counters both depositions, but he counters himself. You know, so it's really ironic. I mean, it seemed like, you know, it wasn't important to them. That's why when, who said, I think it was one of the Oakland PD said, this is devastating at the end of my career that this would happen. Well, if it was so devastating, I mean, why didn't you, you know, brush up a bit and get more prepared for this trial? And I just think they all needed acting coaches. They were suffering severely. I mean, the government has all this money. They should have prepped them better. They were a wreck as far as I'm concerned. I mean, I used to be impressed with that title. I mean, all I've ever seen as far as FBI, I'll say the most current would be the movie with Richard, what's his name, the Latin Italian actor. Meet the Parents. Robert De Niro. He's an FBI agent, and that's, you know, that's all I've ever seen of FBI. It's just kind of impressive, you know. They're cutting edge. They can speak in foreign languages. They're you know, they're all this and that. So you think he'd be really swooned on the, you know, watching them, but they're so bland. I mean, I wasn't impressed in that respect. I thought I was going to really be intrigued with Enelec, and that wasn't the case at all.
Wow.
So. And what about for the plaintiffs? What impressed you there?
Well,
what was the most effective arguments made? You know.
Well, I mean, as far as the argument, you know, it seems as if you have to understand the atmosphere of the trial. The trial was about the FBI in Oakland giving an account for their actions. But what the FBI and Oakland police representatives, attorneys did is they made it a case of our Earth vs. Guilty. They tried to sidetrack you and smokescreen you. But, see, we knew why we were there, and they were trying to throw in smokescreens and make it something that it wasn't. The U.S. District Attorney said it wasn't that. Long time ago, he threw out all charges. But yet, that's all they kept reinventing. They kept bringing in these. All they had was, I think, five flyers. That was their evidence. Some flyers somebody made up, and that was their evidence. They had nothing. They had nothing on these people. So it was more. You say, what was their turning point? Their turning point was the stuff we weren't able to buy from the other people. These people didn't have arrest records. They hadn't done nothing too atrocious in their background that would make me think they'd take this leap. Hanging a banner on the Bay Bridge that says "Save the Planet." The planet needs saving, for God's sake. We're in a total disarray. I mean, that doesn't make me quiver in bed. I'm sorry. I couldn't get with them.
Right.
It's just. Honestly, they didn't have to say anything. It was just too far. It was like some type of far-fetched fairy tale. It was beyond believable.
So, do you think the arrogance and the incompetence of the FBI and the police actually doomed them in some way?
Oh, not so much doomed them. They could have been nice guys, for God's sake.
Right.
It was just that
no evidence.
There was no evidence.
Right.
There was nothing, and there was nothing in their record. There was nothing in their history. There was nothing there that made them these people. Yes, they were people that could have been targeted very easily, and by many different people, I presume. But no, they weren't on a suicide mission. It didn't make sense to me. They were getting ready to really embark on something beautiful and something that they were pouring their whole heart and soul in. And the event wasn't even there yet. So why would they sabotage it? It didn't make sense. It didn't make sense. And things have to make sense. I can't... Just because you're a police officer, FBI, I'm not going to go follow a fairy tale with you. I'm sorry.
Right.
It's got to make sense.
For those of you just tuning in, we're very, very pleased to have Mary Nunn, one of the jurors from the Barry versus the FBI in Oakland police lawsuit. Let's talk about the verdict that was handed down. And, you know, we were wondering, why did the jury hang on the wrongful arrest of Daryl Cherney?
Well, we had one individual that willingly admitted that she never thought that either of them were carrying the bomb. She wanted that to be very clear. But she felt that given what Daryl had in his van, although...
Which was what?
Which was, I guess, a road spiking kit, or one may surmise as to, you know, some rebar, which he said he was going to hold papers down with. But she thought that was enough to lead them to at least go and do the search warrant and justify that, you know, and the arrest.
And she was the only juror that thought that?
Yeah, and we couldn't move her on
mm-hmm.
it.
Well,
and so we had to have a unanimous verdict, and that's why it went down that way. it was kind of ironic because you know, we did do some compromising with her throughout the deal, and she had told us initially she would give us that, but in the end she took it back, and she had given up. We decided to give conspiracy up for that, but because she did that, and I didn't expect it. I think I was just a little bit too intimidated to stand on it, for fear she may go back on other things. and we had so much, I just let it go.
Mm-hmm. Was, you know, I understand.
Well, we let it go.
You all let it go.
I don't have that much power.
So, yeah. So I understand that the jury was hung on another count also up until the last day of deliberations.
That's ironic. Yeah.
Yeah. So what was that? What
okay.
was that count?
Well, we kept trying to get clearance throughout it all. I don't know if, well, a lot of people know. We kept sending notes to the judge, and we wanted clearance. We asked for the First and Fourth Amendment, which we were not granted. Because, you know, unbeknownst to most, we probably went over it in high school, but we don't remember it verbatim.
They wouldn't give you copies of the First and Fourth.
I think that was one of the most significant surprising
Whoa.
Things. Well, that's interesting. She read it to you, right?
Really quick.
She read it to you quickly. So this is something I learned. So our side should have introduced that as evidence.
I heard the FBI wouldn't allow it.
Right.
Actually. But that they
incredible.
Fought not to have that in because they didn't want us to know what it was in detail. And so, you know, we kind of went on, you know.
Who remembers what the First and Fourth Amendment did?
Yeah, and, you know... We really went by her ruling, you know, really. And we went over and over her ruling, and we're like, we would say to ourselves, boy, if they had a chance to rewrite this again, I bet they would because, you know, they're making it hard. The way that she versed things, it was almost the way she versed things to the point where you forget everything that was been presented. It constricted you.
Mm-hmm.
And it really tied us. But we got out of that, you know, that kind of that tight coat, and we were able to do our job, but it was very constrictive, the way that she gave us direction.
Yeah, you guys kind of worked out a Houdini thing in the end, because the directions did really, like, totally
it
tie
really,
you up and dropped you into the ocean, and that's why it took 3 weeks to break loose and run.
But getting back on that, what that was we had one of our, one of the 43 rulings, one of them, we kept asking her, if we find some defendants not guilty and some guilty,
right, liable,
is that okay? And can we find? We were trying to get clearance how we could rule within this maneuver,
mm-hmm.
And then we said, can we find someone undecided? Can we be hung on a person?
Mm-hmm.
Being hung on that, but saying no to maybe two, but being undecided about one,
right?
And saying yes to the ordeal, but undecided if he were guilty or not. Because we didn't want to say no, and we didn't want to say yes, but we wanted to leave it undecided. It should have been hung.
Yes.
But that's what we delivered to her that day, and we were really ready to deliver that day. Mm-hmm. We wanted to give our verdict. We were prepared.
And she sent you back.
She sent us back.
And what was that one that you were asking about? Was that on... Do you remember what...
Yeah, I do remember what it was. It was the Daryl...
The Daryl thing.
Yeah.
Right. There wasn't a second one that you also were hung up on.
No. The conspiracy. It was only conspiracy and Daryl.
Oh, okay.
That was it. There were two.
Those were the two.
And then we did absolutely, we did no to the second search warrant. Because the reason why is because the time.
The second search warrant was Judy's...
Judy and Daryl's
second search. Yeah, the second search on Judy's home. Yeah, why did you decide against that?
Even though it was made with the same paper,
and
it was redone with the same paper, and the paper was not valid, the people in the room said they waited more time. So regardless if it was filled with lies, they said they waited more time, so it gave it more credence. And although I didn't care for it, majority was against me, so it was just one of that give and take things.
Right.
So
right.
Those actually it's three issues. So
yeah.
But the thing was, Daryl, so what we ended up doing, instead of making some walk and some undecided, we just made the whole thing undecided,
right.
Which was actually even worse, because it gave it fuel to be retried,
mm-hmm.
possibly.
Right.
So if she had let it go as it were, then probably she'd have more closure in that. Some people could be walking and not having, mm-hmm. to come back to court.
That's
but
right.
she made it worse, so she might have, but she didn't like that untidiness about that ruling. She wanted it cut or dry, and we kept sending notes.
Her being the woman, the juror.
The judge
right.
didn't
okay.
like the way
right.
that it was. A lot of the problems that we have was one juror just wasn't coming on. I mean, she came on board on many many things, but she wasn't coming on board on some things. She wasn't. She really wanted to believe in her police officers and her, mm-hmm. FBI and.
Yeah. It's a hard leap to make.
I mean, she saw everything that was blatant, and she ruled accordingly, obviously, but she just didn't want to fry him at the stake. She didn't want to go with the conspiracy. She wanted to okay the second search warrant. So that it wasn't so bad, you know. But it all was bad anyway. I mean, even with those elements, letting them walk on those elements, it doesn't mean that they weren't guilty on them. They were guilty on them. But you couldn't get everything. To get 10 people to agree on 43 rulings attached to 7 different people.
Say that again for people that don't get that. 10 people had to agree on
43 issues unanimously. And each of those issues were attached to 7 different individuals. So it was grueling. I mean, it was difficult. I mean, there's 43 issues you have to agree upon unanimously. I mean,
for each person?
Yeah, I mean, if you take someone to an ice cream parlor, they're not all going to agree on the same ice cream. I mean, could you imagine something as detrimental as this? I mean, it was rough, and it was. There were times you wanted to pull your hair out, and there were times you were warmer than heck within your heart because things were going well, and it was up and down. It was an emotional roller coaster. It was rough in there at times. And even though we were very, very civil, it was really ironic. We were always civil, even if you got a little, subtly offensive, but not really. Someone would pull your coat on it and say, that's not called for. And then you'd say, okay. And that was it. You didn't make much more of it. Because we never forgot that it wasn't about us against one another. It was about giving a good verdict and giving a righteous verdict. It wasn't about me and that juror. You know, it wasn't about that. But although opinions did play key, and upbringing did play key,
Let's talk a little bit about that. Let's talk about the dynamics on the jury. So the jury was made up of 8 women, 2 men, and one of the men was an Afro-American guy, and one of the women was Afro-American. It was like many more women on the jury. So did the women run the show, or, how did that play out?
Well,
and also let's talk a little bit about the class dynamics after that.
Yeah, well, I think women outnumber men anyway on the planet, right?
Right.
We do. And we did outnumber the men, but I think Jerry must have grew up in a house of women.
Jerry,
He was a Caucasian gentleman,
uh-huh.
About my height. He was an electronic engineer.
Okay.
He was head of his company, and he was very, he's very savvy with dynamics of things. As a matter of fact, when we first got our orders from the judge, as to how we would rule, I was a little taken aback because the first thing that we did is we took a vote as how we felt overall. That's the first thing we did, and the vote was even. I was like, oh, so it was a little scary. This is the first day, mind you. No one's discussed a thing.
Right.
We just go in the room, and we thought that'd be a great way to start. Mm-hmm. Let's get a feel of the room and see how everybody's sitting right now. And we took a vote, and it was even.
Whoa.
And I was like, wow, where can we go with this? And Jerry stood up, and he grabbed some chalk, and he says, the power of group decision. I said, okay. Well, let's check this out. Let's play along. And they would say, let the process take place. Let it flow. See where it goes. Because I was really like, oh. You know, I was getting impatient. I was like, come on already. You know, I wanted it to flow a little faster.
Mm-hmm.
But they weren't willing to. They were really, they went through everything with a fine-tooth comb. We would address one issue all day. We would go round and round like a round table, and we would address it, and we would rebuttal it, and we would just talk it till you couldn't talk it down anymore. We would just deplete the whole matter. And there was never, I've never seen a fairer, I've never seen a lot of juries, but I swear to you, we were never more fair than I've seen in any setting. I mean, it was fair, and we respected one's view, and we appreciated it. We tried diligently to show them lights on certain things, and they tried diligently to show us maybe how they felt on something. But in the end, through note-keeping, through evidence book, we were able to bring them on board.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is, some people weren't taking notes. Some people were just kind of loafing in there, eyes drifting, maybe fading out a bit. It was a long day. I mean, sometimes they went over things, rehashed things 5 or 6 times. People probably escaped a bit mentally. I was trying not hard to do that. I thought this was important stuff. It was pertinent that I write down everything. And I knew it would be useful later. There was a reason to have this pad and paper and pencil. I was there to do a duty, and I wanted to do it well. And I wanted to see justice prevail. Yeah. I took it very serious. It was a big, big deal to me. Very much so. Yeah. And so there was no way. So a lot of times, they had nothing to consult because they had written nothing. They weren't paying attention. It's called selective hearing. Yeah. And it's sad. But they were a little blasé about it. And that's why there was confusion initially. Mm-hmm. But once we showed them in the evidence book, which was beautifully orchestrated, it was like reading a book, the way it was put together. And some people thought, you know, I kept saying, this is the plaintiff's book they brought to the table. And some people said, no, they just didn't want to share stuff. That's why that's so thick. They just didn't want to duplicate it. I said, no, that's not it. This is all they brought. See these obscure flyers? There's only 5 or 7. That's all they brought. That's all they have is evidence. They have nothing on these people. This is what the plaintiffs brought. And they would not believe me. Mm-hmm. Even the president of the bank said, no, they just didn't want to duplicate. So they weren't hip on court procedures or what's presented or how it's presented. So you had a lot of people that were very green. And when I said they took this case on pro bono, they thought that means you get paid later. They didn't get it. They didn't get it. And I told them, look, there's no interest here with money. The guy drives... I saw his car, not because I was following, because we parked in the same parking lot. One of the lawyers, he drove a Chevy, the cheapest Chevy, smallest economical car you could buy. You could probably pick one up for $4,000 tops off the lot, brand new. I mean, they're not in. He totally was into this for principle, and they just didn't get it. They didn't get it, and they didn't get the terms, and they didn't. And I kept swearing by it. I said, "Let's present a note to the judge. She'll say so." And he was, "If you want to, you know." It was a rough place. It was an odd place, but I don't know. It's, what are you going to do when you're dealing with that? You know, so we did bring up the pages of the book. Mm-hmm. We did go through it. I saw so many times that these people tried to present this case and how many times it was shot and how many angles they tried to take to get it in there. You know, suing Doyle and suing a few here, it wasn't working. They needed to come with something that would stick. And they finally found a way. Yeah. And it was great that they didn't. I'm glad they didn't give up and they pursued it. And I hope other people that are scared and stagnated from moving forward, maybe this will give them the courage to face them and bring it in the forefront.